What's going
to happen?
All right.
Yeah. They can dog.
They back there. They have most of the
Yes.
They're around somewhere. I'm not sure where. We'll figure it out. All right, gentlemen.
Yes.
Let's bring this to order, please.
I welcome everybody, especially some of the faces we haven't seen for a while.
Yeah.
And new face. That's Johnny over here.
Hi, Johnny.
Hey, Johnny.
Hi, Johnny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, tonight, I'm not sure exactly what the publicity said. Well, I choose to defy whatever it said. I'm going to have this be for anybody that is here that has wonderful old stories from the old days, whether from a homosexual standpoint or from a kinky standpoint. I'm going to be doing interview format. You know, we're just kind of making it up as we go along. That's my comfort zone. It's going to be all about love and celebration. Because we made it through, and many people did not. And it's particularly in this Pride season, it's particularly valuable to me to have Mark here, my friend Mark. Mark, how long have we known each other?
32, 33 years, something like that.
Are you the guy that used to do the leather store on Washington?
Yep.
Oh, I still have the pants you made me like.
in the 80s.
Yeah, he's complaining because they don't really fit him anymore. So.
The leather store, right? They do still fit.
But I do want to share a very painful memory, and I apologize for putting you on the spot here. But one of the worst memories I have of any Pride ever in my life, and I've been to a lot of them, was seeing Mark at Pride many years ago, and he was really sick. I mean, really, really sick. And I grieved because I'd seen so many men just as sick, but Mark came back, and I'm so glad, and it's a huge blessing, and I thank you, you know, for your tenacity and sticking around, because the world is a better place with you in it, brother. I'm really glad that you're here.
Thank you. It was like tried real hard.
I know. I've seen you. You know. So, what I would like to do, like I said, I want to open it up. Yes, we have two wonderful guests here tonight. We have Mark Holmes with the beard.
Yes. Oh, there's beards all over the damn place.
And, of course, Steve Heil, right?
Is that how you pronounce it? Back then, as I recall.
And if you guys... Let's just go ahead and start out. We're going to do a different format tonight. But it doesn't have to be just them. If anybody here has memories from old days of any kind that you want to share, pitch in. If you have questions, pitch in. It's very important. This is a flow of information. What usually happens when we do something like this, it's very humorous. It's silly. It's fun. There's lots of love and lots of acknowledgement going on. I'm starting out rather formally, which is kind of blowing it, and I apologize. But it's... I feel very passionate about the topic tonight because we, you know, like I said when I was writing you guys, is that we have been through the flames, and a lot of folks have never experienced some of the things that we have. So my request, going, you know, to start out with, just to get the ball rolling, is tell us a little bit about your history. Mark, why don't you start out? Just, you know, give us a little overview so that everybody here can bond with you like I have.
Some what now?
History. Tell us your
history.
Recap how you got here. You know, when did you come out? When did you first get into leather? You know, how long did you do hard labor leather?
Okay. Let's see. First did into leather way back. I was in the Air Force. And I went to the Air Force Academy, and I went to flight school and learned to fly jets. While I was at the academy, we had a course called SERI, which was Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape, or some combination of that. And part of the course was learning how to survive out in the woods and that sort of thing. Part of it was interrogating, pretending you were being interrogated by upperclassmen, and they were pretending to be enemy, and you were a shot-down pilot. And this was a 3-day thing where they kept me up for 3 days. And I was there first as a student, and then I became an instructor for it later on. And during those 3 days, of doing it, I found that I enjoyed interrogating people and the situation that was in there, and I think that was the first hint that I was into any kind of bondage. Hey, how are you? Long time. Speaking of bondage. So that's where I got into bondage and that sort of thing.
What did you say?
Nothing. Not yet. That's where I got into bondage and the whole idea of it. Leather for me was motorcycles. I didn't even get the whole gay leather thing when I first got into it, when I got out of the Air Force. And one of my first places here was to go to a leather bar and everything, and I'd see everybody in leather, and I didn't get it at first. I was like, well, these guys don't have bikes. Why? And then I realized there was this whole second world of it within the gay community. There was the bikers, and then there were leather guys, and then there was a mix of the two and all, and I found my place in the middle of that. I moved here in 1981. There was some people that owned a leather shop in a bar called Loading Zone that was down on Date in India. And it's a sandwich shop now, if they ever knew what we were doing. But they were making sandwiches, I'll tell you. And the guys that owned it asked me if I wanted to take the bar or take the shop over. And I was out of work at the time. I had just gotten out of the Air Force, and I thought, sure, why not? I got involved in that, and it was just little stuff. It was really retail, selling little things, cock rings and movies and magazines and things like that. And then I decided I could turn this into a business, and started. I hired some people that knew how to sew, and then we started making chaps and more things. And I learned how to sew, and I had employees that left, so I had to take their place in the sewing part of it. And the next thing I know, I'm making chaps. And I've got this business going that I had never intended. It was just serendipity, you know. And then at some point, I thought, let's make this real, not a little thing in the corner of a bar, but let's actually get a place of business. So I'm trying to think what year that was. This is 85, I guess.
They sell wheelchairs.
Right now, what's the place called now? The Great Maple or something? Mm-hmm. Used to be Brian's. There was Topsy's before that. Yeah. Other things in the middle. I mean, it's been around for...
So there's a little house across the street.
Yeah. And there's a little house next to it that's...
Is it a wheelchair?
The medical facility and all that stuff. And that was my house. The back side was my house, and the front was the shop. And that was sort of the... What would you say, Tommy? It was a little gathering place for the leather community back then.
It was probably more
than it was a shop. Everybody would, besides the bars, for some place to come in and chat and just kind of mix with everybody, and that's what it ended up being. And that's where Tony and I met. And I was like a total computer illiterate, and Macintosh came out, and I was like, oh, a computer I could use. Wow. And he came in and showed me how to do all that stuff, and we became friends. And I had that place for, I think, six and a half years. And then it was getting, it was 87 I found out I had AIDS. And about 91, it was to the point where my partner had moved to Los Angeles, and I decided, let's sell the business, and I sold it to people that now own the crypt, or since somebody else. And moved to LA with him and got very, very sick and came back here to die and then didn't, which was a good thing. Mm-hmm. And
thank you.
Yeah.
Damn, I got to find a job again.
I had some friends that had said just before they go, you're living for me now. I'm only going to be here another couple of days. And I remember in particular my best friend at the time, and we were in Los Angeles. He lived in Los Angeles along with me and my partner. And we checked him out of the hospital. I thought they had checked him out, and he hadn't. He just knew that it was time. And I was getting ready to take a 10,000-mile motorcycle trip around the country. And And he said, could you stay for another hour? And I was, wasn't like Brian. I was like, wow. I said, sure. So we just sat there and put my arm around me, watched television for like an hour, and went to say goodbye, and I'll see you when I get back from the trip. And he gave me this look I'll never, ever forget. That was, you're never going to see me again, and go have a good time. Mm-hmm. And then I found out on the trip, while I was on the trip, that he had passed away. And I was fortunate for all that was going on and all the people that we were losing. I was very fortunate that people that were really close to me, close friends, I only had a handful. It was really odd for most people. It was a lot bigger than that. I mean, acquaintances and people, like customers and everything, it was hundreds, if not a thousand.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, there were people, yeah. There were 2 dozen people a week in the newspaper. I mean, every week, 2 dozen faces there. It was just boom, 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 one after another. And for my own story, I remember 95 reading an article and flying back from Florida in Newsweek, and it was this new, I can't remember what the number of the drug was. They didn't have a name for it yet, but it was like, this is making people better. And I thought, man, if I could hang in here another 6 months and eat a lot of pizza and ice cream and keep my weight up, yeah. And yeah. Hope that, you know, the worst doesn't happen. And we got lucky and did. And I remember looking at that pill for like 3 hours the first day I got it, before I took it. And I looked at it and said, it's amazing. It gave me 3 months to live, and if I take this, I could live to be an old man. Wow. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy, you know? Yeah. And popped it, and the rest is story. And that was 96, I guess. Mm-hmm. And almost immediately, all this stuff started working. At the time, I was in, I think the last time you saw me there, I was walking canes, and I was in a yeah. wheelchair. I went blind in my right eye, went deaf. Lost my balance, couldn't walk. I had to learn to walk again and all that stuff. But fortunately, all that's over, and knock wood, we're going to try to keep it that way. There's PREP for the kids today, and anybody that wants to try to stay negative, that's a smart thing and a wonderful thing we've got. And hopefully, I mean, knock wood, I've been almost 10 years undetectable, and my T-cells just went up to this last month. I've been part of a study for 30 years where they, every 6 months, you give like 26 tubes of blood and pee in cups and answer a million questions and tell them every single bit of sex you've had and how many people, and, you know, did you have intercourse? Intercourse is defined as putting your penis in your partner's mouth or rectum. How many times have you had intercourse in the last 6 months? And then it goes from there, and it's all this deep. Yeah, and there's guys that they actually have a little black book, and every time they finish sex, they write it all down like the driver. And I just go in there and I guess, and there's sometimes it's like, geez, I can't remember how many, fuck, I don't know, 20, 30, something, and whatever. And there's other times it's like, man, I was really boring the last 6 months. It was like two. So, life is good right now. I'm my biggest new thing in life right now is learning to do new things every year. A couple of years ago, I learned how to fly jetpacks down in the bay, and now I've become a member down there and fly all the time. And anybody wants to go, I get a free flight for somebody every month, so scream at me. And then for my 61st birthday last year, I've always wanted to skydive. I had a bad wreck in a hang glider when I was 22, and I switched to hang gliding because a friend of mine got hurt skydiving. So I thought, oh, that looks dangerous. We'll do this hang gliding. And I spent 8 months in a cast for that. So that was stupid. And then in October last year, I started, and 15 days I had a license, and never ever looked back. It's awesome. Yesterday I went flying with a 20-year-old kid, and we were talking about, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to go out the door, we'll hook our legs, hook our hands, out, in, out, roll out the door, and do a little tumble, and we're laughing at each other as we're falling from 2 miles up. And then I talked to him, and I said, how about you come along on my left side, because I can't see you on my right. come on to my left side, just kind of flat alongside me. He goes, yeah, he says, I'll put my hand out and touch your hair. So all of a sudden I feel this blur, or see this blur come off to my left. He doesn't just grab my hand, he grabs my hand and flips me. And I'm tumbling through the air. I'm like, whoa! Straighten myself back up. Came back and came over and gave him one of those looks. And then we came over, we touched hands again, and then split, popped your parachutes, and came back in. And it was an awesome day. So I highly recommend that to anybody who ever wants to do something really different. Go do a tandem jump and see if you like it. It's I've never in my life done anything as cool as this. It's a better set, but don't tell anybody I said that. So, that's my story.
Very good.
Long and drawn out, but that's...
We'll have more. We'll have more questions for you. Steve.
Not nearly as dramatic, but it's an interesting connection, actually. I grew up in the other Orange County, the one that has both a Disney and a SeaWorld. I met a guy who was ex-Air Force, and we were both finishing school. He was 7 years older than me, and we moved to D.C., and the D.C. Eagle, it was the second Eagle, if you guys know D.C., it was the second Eagle. They had a back bar area that you had to have leather to get in, and being a 22-year-old, fairly naive kid from Florida, I did not have any leather, so he actually bought me my first pair of boots so that I could go back there. And I spent a lot of time in. Well, it was about four blocks from the house, so it was really... And I mean, having grown up in Florida, where the really, literally, every bar would stop at 10 o'clock for the drag show. Every bar. I mean, no matter what bar you went into, drag show time, the whole bar stops. So to go to a place where it's all masculine men was pretty amazing.
What year?
This would have been 82. Yeah. Also, then, shortly after I moved to D.C. in 82, there were these articles in the gay paper. Hey, I've never seen a gay paper before. This is cool. About this new strange thing that was happening to men in some of the bigger cities. And there was a meeting at the, it wasn't even the Gay Community Center at the time, it was like a library or something. And there was a panel of doctors that were talking about this thing that at the time was called GRID, gay-related immune deficiency. The scary thing is we at that time knew nothing about how it was spread. And some of us kind of figured that it probably was not airborne, but that was one of the things that was being discussed, was, is it airborne?
And we know that now.
Yeah. But at the time, it's like, all of a sudden these people are dying, and there's no idea, nobody knows why.
It must be called HTLV then after that, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Like human T lymphocytes.
And then HTLV-3.
And it finally. So that was kind of my first exposure to any of this, that there was this thing. So, of course, being young and quite sexually active, I was worried about it, of course. I was cute then.
You are now.
We're all cute then.
I kept up with this stuff. And one of the things that happened, and I think it was 83, was the first big AIDS fundraiser. This had never been done before, but the Gay Men's Health Crisis Club out of New York rented Madison Square Garden for a night of the Ringling Brothers Circus. It had never been done before. The entire Madison Square Garden was full of people that had paid the money to see this, and it was, of course, a fundraiser for GNHC. D.C. was a short train ride, so of course we went up. What was fantastic about it was all the bars got into it, too. And every bar on Christopher Street had some sort of a circus theme that night. After the circus, I remember going to the Mine Shaft. And they had all circus stuff going on. It was amazing. It's like you walk into a room and there's like a snake charmer or something. You walk into another room and there's somebody doing bondage with you know, circus ropes and things like that. It was amazing. Long story short, I ended up bootblacking at the exit there. The exit was the bar, at the back bar at the Eagle. And met a guy in Maryland who was quite furry, bearded, kind of all the things that I like, and my husband at the time, we were having some issues, and I said, I need a few weekends away. So that's where I started doing things with. We would start playing rough things. I was also on a motorcycle at the time, and I remember one time there were big motorcycle runs back then. You guys probably don't even see it now, but that was a big part of the leather at that time. During the summer, there was at least up in the Northeast, there was at least one motorcycle run every weekend, and we're talking 50 to 100 to 200 people. And there was one that went every Memorial Day, and I remember going up there one time, and as I said, I was having some issues with my partner at the time, and he was going away for the weekend to the beach, and I was going away for this weekend up in New York with motorcycle thing, and I'm going to pack my bike, and I find that I have a tent, and I have no sleeping bag, because he took the sleeping bag. So I was like, well, I'm still going to go up. And I went up, get to the campsite, and lo and behold, I found a gentleman with a sleeping bag and no tent. And so I literally walked up to this man, and I said, you know that old song, you've got a brand new pair of roller skates and I've got a brand new key? So anyway, that was a fun weekend. I was also, around that time, I was president of Sigma, which was the S&M club in D.C. I won't say I saved it, but there were several of us that the club had been devastated by AIDS, of course, and there were several of us that kind of got together and said, okay, we have to save this, you know, we have to save this, we have to recreate ourselves. And we did, in fact, we made it a little pansexual for a while, which was a good thing, because it kind of brought in new blood, as it were. And we had a wonderful, the Gay Community Center there had a wonderful space that we could use. It was a three-floor building, and so we had the first floor was the social space, and the second floor was the women's space, and the third floor was the men's space. So we would have these wonderful play parties there. And when I met my current husband on a street in Georgetown, I think I told the story last time that I told him I'm president of the club, and he said, well, what does that entail? And I said, well, there's different things. I said, you know, I like wax, I like electricity. I said, but there's certainly people that are into catheters and people that are into shaving and, you know, all kinds of things. And he's going, well, I was an orderly at a hospital and we used to do all that stuff. I didn't realize it was sex. he and I ended up, he was a little long-distance relationship, and we ended up moving to Denver, where we helped found the Front Range Bears, obviously, and the Denver chapter of Defenders, which is the leather group within Dignity, which is the gay Catholic group. So that was very cool. I went to Sturgis twice with some of my Defenders brothers.
What year?
92 and 91 and 92.
Where'd you stay?
Okay, so the first time. It was the backyard of one of the guys that we were with. His sister lived in Sturgis, and so we were literally camping in his backyard, or in the sister's backyard. There is something weird about having sex with somebody in the in his sister's backyard.
Yeah.
The next time we stayed, oh my gosh, where was it? It was actually a real campground. I mean, like normal campground all year kind of thing.
Pineco?
Maybe, I'm not sure. It's
our club started going there in like 1990 and by 92. Is that when we were there?
Yeah, it was 91.
By 92, we had 20 or 30 gay guys there, and then campground there.
I'm going
there next week.
I just remember sitting by the light of the Coke machine, studying my notes for the motorcycle club, because I was having to get initiated when we got back. So I'm literally studying notes by the light of the Coke machine. You do what you do. Okay? I didn't have a phone with a flashlight in it. Okay? And I forgot to bring a flashlight, which was like which is not like me. Sometime I'll tell the story of a camping trip that was bizarre, but anyway. So let's see. So that brings us up to the 90s. 84. I had a Mac on my desk 3 weeks after it was introduced. I joked that I had a 4-digit serial number. So let's see, that brings us up in the 90s. I'd say most of the 90s I was actually definitely doing more bear stuff than actual a lot of leather stuff. But that's just, you know. So.
What motorcycle club were you hooked up with in Denver?
The Rocky Mountaineers.
Did you ever go to service with them?
No.
Okay, because they came in Camp Gildas one year.
Were you Seder?
Yeah.
Okay. I was president of the Mountaineers 1 year. I was road captain 1 year. We had a GFR. The first year that I was there, GFR, we ended up having to almost cancel it. There's really only two of the big old roughing it motorcycle, gay motorcycle runs left. It's the Seders and the Rocky Mountaineers. Seders is... No?
You're forgetting our club.
Sorry? Which club?
We're called Hogs Dogs. We've been around for a while.
And you do a weekend run?
We got 50 people going to Sturgis next week.
No, I'm saying an old... I mean, like a camp out by... Like, this one Seders do, Satyricon?
Yeah, that's what we're doing next week.
Okay.
We just find our own place at Sturgis and do it that way. We kind of take over half.
We would go into the mountains. We took food for 200 people for a week, water for 200 people for a week. We'd set up showers. We'd set up. We would haul hot water heaters up to the mountains. Set up showers for people and things, and we would do this weekend, well, long weekend. Usually it was about a 5-day thing.
So, for the benefit of the men here who have not had the experience of a run, what did the runs originally start out as back in the 50s?
I don't go back that far.
Well, you know the history, though, don't you?
What's the question?
The question is, do you know the history of runs from, say, the 1950s?
I can tell you about some of the stuff of the Seders. I mean, they've been around. They were 15 years before Stonewall. They were up in the hills of California. And what was the book? The Hell's Angels. Hunter Thompson wrote about it. He wrote about this one weekend in particular where all the police were coming up there, and there were sheriffs from six states coming in, and because the Hells Angels were there and they had to like police this thing and everything. And on the same weekend, and it was Badger. That was all the gay guys. They were only 30 miles away up in the hills, and the police wouldn't go because they were too freaked out. they'd take on the Hells Angels, but they wouldn't take on the gay leathermen that were up and hanging people in trees and all that kind of shit. It was too freaky. So they wouldn't go do that. So they've been doing that for a very, very long time. I mean, one of their guys just died a couple of years ago, Ted, and he was probably in his, I guess he was in his 80s anyway, in really good shape. And they had pictures of him in the 50s with his Harley cap and his big FLH Harley and all that stuff. And they've been going around for forever and ever and ever.
I mean, Rocky Mountaineers' first run was 69.
Well, the reason why I brought it up is because back in the 50s, the only way to do kinky stuff without going to prison was to get on a motorcycle and get the hell out of civilization, go up into the forest so that people couldn't, you know, follow you and then go have fun out there. And, you know, it was something you did as a self-protective thing, and it became a tradition, you know, as I understand it. So thank you for introducing yourself, gentlemen. Is there more that you wanted to say?
No, probably not.
Okay. So then, what would you say, this is first for Mark, same question for you after that, is what would you say is the biggest difference between now and then?
Now and then what?
Back when you were first getting into the scene.
For the motorcycle thing or something?
Or for leather, anything to do with leather. Or the gay community. You know, you choose. Tell some stories.
Certainly a lot more transsexual and mixed with everybody. I mean, by far. I mean, that was... I mean, when I left San Diego in 91, that was nearly unheard of. I mean, and when I came back in 96, it was in full swing, and I was in shock. I was like, what the fuck happened in 6 years here, you know? And the answer was almost all of us were, 90% of us died. Mm-hmm. And women came in with it, and straight guys came in with it, and there was... held on to the community and a few guys that were left and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's what ended up happening. We owe them a lot, certainly. That's the biggest difference I've noticed. I mean, because at one time, I mean, you couldn't... you know, woman or drag queen or whatever tried to walk into a bar. I mean, it was rude and nasty to order things on the doors and... you know, open-toed shoes and know this and know that and know that. They were all little code things to keep people out, anybody that wasn't into leather and, you know, completely and totally, and it's supposed to keep everybody out. So.
Yeah, we had a, Rocky Mountaineers, 1 year our road captain was a woman, and she's probably the butchest person I've ever met. And we had a little fight with the triangle at the time to let her in because, you know, I mean, she was a leather woman as much as any of us were leather men. And we had a fair fight with them over that because they wanted men only.
So same question. Go
biggest,
ahead.
Yeah, the biggest, I, you know, what I found in Orlando, what I found way back then, was that basically social life was the bar. If you didn't go to the bar, there was no social life. Well, there was a little a-gay dinner party thing that I was part of for a little bit, but basically it was the bar. And I got to D.C., and everything was... there were these wonderful organizations. There were organizations for everything. In Denver, there was even a gay model railroad club, if you could... And what I see today is a lot of those kind of things are actually falling by the wayside, mm-hmm. because those were places for people to meet. Mm-hmm. And with an app on the phone, people meet that way instead of let's go create a gay motorcycle or a gay model railroad club. So I think that's the big thing. And I'm, you know, on one hand, I love the fact that it is easier to meet, but on the other hand, I kind of miss some of those groups that were so tight because of that.
Yeah, it's easy to attract, but harder to retain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Where did you say you were for those 6 years, Mark? Where were you? Where are you?
You left San Diego. You're not in San Diego.
91 to 96.
I was living in Los Angeles. I was healthy for the first couple of 3 years, but there I was working in movies and television and commercials and working at a Harley dealer part-time. And then in 94, I started to get ill. Things started happening to me, and I'd see the changes come in, and they watched me go down help work and all that shit. And finally, one day I had to tell them, and they were like, wow. Oh, we lose all the best people. I said, oh, that was nice.
Yeah.
The reason I asked that question was, wasn't L.A., San Francisco, weren't they the ones that were really leading the pack, so to speak, and kind of moved down here later?
I'm trying to think. My social life was different up there than it was here.
Okay.
It was a lot more spread out, and this was a lot closer. I thought of like closer community, and then this was a lot more spread out. I was busy with work and a bunch of other things going on in there, and I didn't see too much of
that. So. Yeah, if I can jump in on that, I moved from Denver from D.C. to Denver in 1991. And, yes, there was a definite difference. The first-tier cities, New York, D.C., San Francisco, L.A., they were definitely ahead. We moved to Denver, it was like moving 5 years back.
Yeah.
It was where in D.C., people had pretty much, by 91, had pretty much learned to deal with losing friends, but learn to move on. And people were starting to say, okay, we still need, everybody who's around still needs to go and continue building things. I mean, there was a period in the mid-80s there where kind of everything stopped because nobody wanted, it's like you were so busy dealing with people being sick and such, you didn't really think ahead. And by 89, 90, they were starting to look ahead already. We moved to Denver, and it was like moving 5 years back. So I wasn't here then. I actually, my first trip to San Diego was 93. And it seemed very much like Denver to me at the time. So I'm guessing that it was very similar in that it took a few more years to get over
there. I lived up in L.A. up until 1981, and then I moved down here. And it seemed like I had moved 10 years back.
Yeah.
And it wasn't 5, it was 10. There was nothing here. And sometimes I would just say, hell with it. Hell with San Diego. And I'd get on the car and I'd drive back to L.A.
Yeah, that was not really easy for us from Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Denver is the big city for 600 miles.
That was the reason I asked, wasn't he involved in any of the things going on in L.A.? I mean, that was kind of... And then even you get on an airplane and you fly up to San Francisco and you go, wow, I just moved ahead 10 years. Those three cities just didn't jive for a long time.
L.A. was... I mean, back before the whole AIDS thing.
Yeah.
Was certainly, there was a lot happening. I mean, when I was like 22, there was this 17-year-old kid that was teaching me how to fist him, how to do all this stuff, and I was living in Spokane, Washington, which was about as provincial as it could possibly fucking be, and he would get in his little Volkswagen truck with a diesel engine and race down to Los Angeles and just go to the baths for the weekend. And then turn around and come all the way back to Spokane.
Wow!
That's desperation.
There were a whole bunch of motorcycle clubs at Griff's, the old Griff's. You remember that one on Melrose?
I remember those times, too.
Yeah.
Okay, it's interesting what happens.
Speaking of bathhouses, what was the name of the bathhouse that was over the loading zone? Was on the second floor.
I don't remember it having a name. I remember it was the place upstairs.
Yeah.
And there wasn't, and there was, literally was nothing up there. It was just empty rooms that you could go have sex in. I mean, there was
the basement of the triangle.
Did it have a name?
I don't remember it having
a name. I don't
think
it did.
I never heard of it having a name.
I can't remember if the owners just bought the area upstairs or opened it up or whatever they did. But
the basement of the triangle in Denver.
Basement of the triangle.
See, and I was just like 2 years too late for the ballpark in Denver.
Oh.
The ballpark in Denver was a bathhouse that I never got to.
Awesome.
My understanding is that people on cross country trips would actually plan a 6-hour layover in Denver so they could go to the ballpark.
Miss my plane.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was about as cool as it got.
And about 5 years ago, I found just before we left Denver, somebody was doing a big somebody had like donated a bunch of stuff to the Botanic Gardens, whatever, and they just had this bunch of boxes, and I started going through all these albums, and several of them were marked ballpark on them. And I mean, it was all 1980s music, so I grabbed the whole thing and ended up giving them to several of the various organizations around town. Just like, here, this is a part of Denver history. You need to hang on to it.
We talked about the Eagle and DC.
Yes.
And it had three stories.
The second Eagle, right, yeah. The one with the big staircase.
Yeah.
Exile across the street from it?
No, that was the first Eagle.
Yeah.
Okay,
the second
there.
Eagle.
The second Eagle
was on 7th, and the Exile was on 9th.
I was at the first.
And the first time I saw snow ever was I had gone out dancing to the Exile. I grew up in Florida, 22 years old, had never seen snow, and I went out to the Exile one night, and we were dancing away, and I saw people coming in with snow on their jackets, and it's like, oh, this is cool. So I got my hand stamped, and I ran outside, and it's like, this is so cool. And it's like, oh, fuck, this is cold.
What's the name of the organization after Sigma? It ended with discipline. Was that Man of Discipline?
Oh.
Lords of Discipline.
No, okay.
What was that?
You're talking about Command?
I don't remember. It had discipline in the name of it.
One of the clubs was Confederation of Men Making a Noticeable Difference.
No, that wasn't.
Okay.
It had the word discipline in it.
Yeah. I don't know that.
Men of Discipline?
Lords of Discipline?
One of the leather clubs is called Confederation of Men Making a Noticeable Difference, CONMAND, which was locally known as Come On Mary, Make Me a New Dress.
WCPCs and We Can't Produce Children.
That's right.
What did you say it was? Lords of Discipline?
That may be something else entirely. I think that was a movie.
It was HEP. HEP was big there.
Well, that was the organization that first unfurled the leather flag at IML.
Okay, thank you. I left D.C. in January of 1991.
So, I think that it's time for a sidebar. I think it's very important that anybody who's been to the ballpark tell us what the hell it was about. Why would anybody want to go there?
It had a baseball theme. It was a few stories, at least two or three stories high. And down at the end of the hallways, there would be graphics of somebody, it was all black inside with these white graphics of ball players and shit. But there was one section, it was like the Mexican restaurant that they made fun of on South Park now. It was a three-story waterfall with a grotto that you could have sex inside the grotto. I remember that was what they got chewed out for playing in the main grotto. They said, no, you have to go down inside there and do that. And they had lots of other... it was sort of... classy, but it was a place that if you had always thought of leather as some little whatever, it was it wasn't even a lot of place. Yeah. I mean, it was just gay men going having sex.
Did they have the semi? Or was that a different place?
The what?
A semi cab. The cab from a semi truck. Or was that a different place?
No, that was a different place. That was okay.
They all blend into one.
They may have had one there, but that place you're thinking of, I think, is the Brig in San Francisco. Brig?
There's a place in Philadelphia.
Yeah, the Brig in San Francisco. They had a cab, yeah. Or
a bike stop,
18-wheeler yeah. cab inside the third story of the bar or third story of the bathhouse that you could go up and crawl in and have trucker sex in.
You're talking about you said the bike stop in Philadelphia where they had the bike over the...
There was a different place that was an after hours.
But it was a Honda 350.
Yeah, everyone, if you wanted to...
Okay, we disagree here because I'm not a Harley guy.
Well, Harley might have had a truck in there.
But I do know better than a Honda 350. I was a Beamer guy. Actually, yeah. Which was always interesting in Sturgis because nobody knew what to do with Beamers. They were like, it was the Harley guys, and then it was, you know...
The Rice Grinders.
And, yeah, it's like, we hate the Rice Grinders. You know? Well, but they didn't know what to do with BMWs, because they were like, well, they're... Yeah, they're as exclusive a group.
I'm not sure what you're saying there, but...
Well, at Sturgis, there's always the rivalry between the Harleys and the Japanese bikes.
That's more or less gone away, and everybody's biker bikers now. Yeah. Part of that, our thing was having our group and trying to sort of stay together. And this was like we started going there before this was on television and gay. Everybody knew there were gay motorcycle groups and all that kind of stuff. And this was like shock for the fucking people that were there when they would come out and finally start to figure out when they would come out. And they didn't get it at first at all. You know, it took them a while. But it wasn't like we weren't doing anything. I mean, they had in the campground there, they have this main road, and at night, there's like people 10 feet deep for 2.5 miles on the road, and there's cars going by, and chicks are showing their tits, and they're all up there and doing all this stuff. And we're like 40 feet back in the shadows, fucking each other on the fucking motorcycles, and we're like, this is crazy. Crazy, you know, this is just crazy with all these people. And they would see us because the light from all that shit on the road would come up, and they just see us, and it looked like two guys sort of animating, talking to each other. The light up above, but then we'd have somebody bent over the bike down in the shadows, and they couldn't see that. And we were sort of trying to behave ourselves for a couple of years, and we finally said, just fuck it, you know, and then we were out there doing our own thing, and never got called out on it from anybody.
On a slightly darker note, I remember one time at Sturgis, our group was probably 15, 20 people, and we're just going through all of the vendors there, and we were all looking at this one vendor's stuff, and he has all these buttons and things, and kind of going, okay, you know, people are interested in things, and then I pointed out that he had a pin for sale that said, AIDS cures fags.
Ooh.
And I pointed to that, said, hey guys,
what's
the whole group. And as a unit, we all turned our backs and walked away.
Mm-hmm. So helmet stickers and all that stuff?
Yeah. And it said AIDS cures fags.
Yeah.
The only one I ever got on there was protected by a pit bull of AIDS, and it's still on my motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. So if I could... Once again, yank the conversation in a different direction. Mark, could you introduce your friend to us? Tell us about your friend over here. We have no idea who he is.
You don't know who I am.
I have no clue who you are.
Yes, you do.
Well, remind me. I'm old and forgetful.
My name is Don.
His name is Don. And back, what was his name that owned the place on Space Night?
What? I'm sorry?
That owned the place out in the woods.
Oh, gosh, I can't remember his name. Yeah, the two guys that...
I mean, I'm a senior mom, I can't remember. Really nice guy. He was an older fella. Yeah. And he owned a cabin out by where the Uranians wait for the spaceships and shit. And he would open his cabin up for sort of like Roadkill's place. And it was, we'd haul
Roadkill was there.
We'd haul socks and slings and tables and shit out there and have a weekend.
John McConnell.
And that's where Don went.
All right. Well, pardon my terrible memory. Neither one of us has changed since those days, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But could you tell us a little bit about your history, please? Yeah. You know, how did you get into the scene? And where and when?
Well, I wasn't expecting to say anything, but...
Why don't you come sit over here with Steve here?
I don't know who Roadkill was or is.
What's that?
He's not as innocent as he looks. He's a mean, nasty badass.
He's the guy that runs
around.
I was bike at Sturgis naked.
Remember, I was East Coast until. You know.
By the way, have you jumped out of an airplane naked yet?
I'm supposed to do that for my 100th jump, and I'm only 63, so.
Oh, okay. Okay. Still have a ways to go. That ought to be fun, flapping all over the place.
Go to Burning Man, they'll do this. There's always people jumping. There's always people jumping at Burning Man.
Well, I grew up in Denver, the Triangle. Whatever happened to Triangle anyway? What is it now?
It's now a trendy, like, barbecue place. Yeah.
It's kind of like the apartments over the loading zone now. They're all gentrified. I think to myself, those people only knew what was going on up there. But,
well, not even up there. I mean, were you there for the closing of that place?
Oh, yeah.
There were like three guys being fisted over the counter. And I mean, that was a wild, crazy night.
What was the name of the bar down the street?
Everybody just let it all go that night.
What was the name of the bar down the street? It was on the same street down there, Laurel.
You mean Bulk?
The Bulk?
Was it the Bulk?
Originally a club.
Yeah, originally the club, but then it became Bulk, yeah.
And then it was a...
woman's bar.
Then it was a lesbian.
They've been the Casbah for 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I grew up in Denver. Was in the Air Force. Colorado Springs. Stuck in a hole in the ground for almost 8 years. The hole in the ground is called NORAD.
Jim.
Just south of Colorado Springs.
Why are you in Colorado Springs?
1968 to 73, I think. 74. I got out of the Air Force then.
So I was the academy there in Springs while you were there. Huh.
Yeah. And then I moved from, when I got out of the service, I moved to L.A. And I lived in L.A. for 11 years. L.A. was wonderful. It was like coming out of the woods from leaving Colorado Springs. There was nothing in Colorado Springs.
There's always one bar plus one.
Well, the only thing that was alive at the time, and it was an hour and a half drive, was up to Denver, to the Triangle. And at that time, they didn't even have the basement. That didn't open up until much later. And after being in my first blowjob ever, I think I was about 26, 27 in public, while I was standing in the at Griff's across the street from Paramount Studios, I think it is. A whole bunch of guys standing around all drinking and everything, and this guy drops to his knees in front of him and gives me a blowjob, and at that time, when anybody puts their mouth around my dick, I shot it. Is this what this is all about? So the answer to your question, tell me, that's where it started.
All
right. Right after that, I started talking to a lot of the people that were there who were very friendly. There was another place down the street from there. It was, I don't know what the hell it was. It was called the Meat Rack. Do you remember the Meat Rack? I think it was
yes, I remember it very well.
What the hell was the name?
And I remember bad
Santa Monica
about it too.
Yeah.
I remember going in there with a guy that was overweight, and there were three of us, two guys in the service and me, and they wouldn't let him in. Why not? Because he was overweight. And yeah. So there, and we went, we were furious, and we turned around and said, fuck you, and went to leave. Fucked him up for a long time. Oh, no, no, you can come back. Anybody can come back, too. Fuck you.
Yeah. Well, Meat Rack had...
There was a lot of weird prejudice back then, too.
Yeah, Meat Rack had some good stuff. St. Andrew's crosses, had little rooms, little places where you could get involved.
Get involved. Is that what the kids are calling it now?
Yes.
That's what the kids called it back then.
You can get involved.
That's right. So that was kind of as nasty as it got, really. Is oh, yeah.
That was
probably
bad.
Craziest shit yeah. I'd ever seen in a public place.
Yeah. Well, it's not exactly public.
Well, what could you...
I mean, something that wasn't a private party, something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere where you could pay and get in.
And
for people.
And you didn't know who the hell these people were, because most of the time it was dark.
No, Paul's barred there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was in everything.
Yeah. So that's where I got started. Mm-hmm. I met a number of people there.
And what year was this?
That was probably... I moved here in 1990, so it was probably... 85, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's right about the time things started getting a little hairy about health-wise and everything.
I remember that.
Maybe it was a little bit later. But at that time, I was working for a company that had this kind of work for me. I was an instructor. And as such, I... My class was 5 days long, actually 4.5. That last half day was a test day. So they said, hey, we like what you're doing. We want to send you on a trip. So here I go. So I'd go from one city, teach one whole week. Over the weekend, I'd go to another city. Another week, I'd go to another city. So in my travels, I hit almost all of the Far East. Hong Kong, Singapore, all these kind of places. And everywhere I'd go, I'd find didn't take long at all. Just walk around, yeah. And you can find them.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's there. That was probably early 90s.
Nice.
So that was kind of fun. I mean, even when I did tours of the United States, I'd go from here from L.A. to San Francisco, Seattle to Minneapolis. 5 or 6 weeks on the road, every week, every place I'd go, didn't matter where, boom, I'd find Washington, D.C.'s Eagle,
That was certainly something that's changed a lot now, because nowadays you just get on an app and you say gay cities, or whatever,
yeah.
You say, well, where is it? And back, I mean, even in the 90s,
yeah.
I remember... I had a business trip to like Cedar Rapids, and so I'm like trying to find where is there gay life in Cedar Rapids.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to kind of you had to really work at it, because
yeah.
It wasn't just open, but if you found
one person,
yeah.
Then
yep.
You could find out what everything was in the city.
There were two ways.
Yep.
Most important ones, you just pick up the phone and call the local cop and say, where's the gay bar? And they would tell you.
Yeah.
That would be it. Or you could look in the phone book and look for the Eagle in almost any
yeah.
city.
Yeah.
And there would, if it was called the Eagle, then it was probably a gay bar.
Yeah.
I have two other ways, too. One, Bob Dameron's guide.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
were good at every point.
Even before Bob.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, just get into a cab and say, where's the gay
yeah.
bars?
Yeah.
They take you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be afraid of that in like place like Cedar Rapids. In the
we go on the highway.
The thing about the Eagle, though, usually the Eagle in most cities
yeah.
is the leather bar. And they really threw me for a loop in Boston, because back then the Eagle in Boston was... it was major preppy bar. I went to the Eagle in full leather, and everybody in there.
You've gotten a ramrod.
Yes.
Well,
ramrod.
I did. They pointed me to the ramrod.
Go to the ramrod. My two favorite places, Des Moines, Iowa.
What? Why?
And the Double Eight Meat Market in Chicago. Which is now gone.
Why Des Moines?
Huh?
Why Des Moines?
I don't know. I met some people there that I can make this statement, and I think it's still valid. They're so repressed that when they find somebody that wants to do what they want to do, they kind of explode.
Like a Mormon.
All of a sudden, it's kind of like, whoa, you can do that? Yeah, I can do that.
I think there's still a lot of that in a lot of the middle of the country.
Yeah.
In the smaller places, there's a lot of that. There is the one gay bar because that's all the town can support, and people are usually very welcoming because they need to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember going to, when I lived in Denver, I used to go to Salt Lake and never had trouble in Salt Lake because then they would sign you into the club.
Yep.
They had to sign you in then. Mm-hmm. So they sign you into the club, and it's like you're from out of town? Cool, come in.
You know. Nice. So I'm going to go veering off wildly, and thank you very much for sharing, but I wanted to acknowledge the fact that our brother Richard, who has been with us for a while, and is wonderful, but he's never really told us much about his own history, and he knows some stuff from the old days that I know, and I think it's time for you to come out of the closet and tell us a little bit about your history.
Are you in
a
closet?
Are you
no,
gay?
Not actually.
But I am gay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it
started off so quietly and conservatively in this city. I mean, I came here to San Diego in the Navy first in 65, so I got to get back to the city. I didn't know why, but I had to be here. 2.5 years later, I was back, and somewhere or other, I found the club. And the first time I went to the club, I went to the club in my dress white uniform. I was in the Navy. I was fixed up in my dress white uniform.
This was what year?
68, probably.
Yeah.
It was probably on the list of places not to go.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
That's the list you used to find.
I was charming. And I was thought, well, this is great, you know. I don't know how I found it, actually, but I did find it. And I could walk there, which was great, from where I was living up on Bankers Hill. But the first person I ever kind of connected socially with at the club was a lesbian who totally freaked me out because I had never met a lesbian before and I was terrified of them. I heard of them. she was fascinated with me because apparently in my Navy uniform I looked just like her dad, so she fell in love with me. But she became kind of my lesbian mama. She provided a home for me and my first boyfriend, and who I met shortly afterwards down there. And it was really just very vanilla for a couple of years. I mean, the most exotic thing I think I did was go to the Tubs, which I loved, especially the one that was called Dave's out of the beach.
I remember that.
And they didn't actually have a lot of leather or anything going on there that I remember.
Was that behind the Safeway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my favorite
outdoor pool.
Yeah, they had a huge outdoor pool.
They had an outdoor pool.
And an outdoor jacuzzi and an indoor jacuzzi. The outdoor jacuzzi could fit about 18 people.
Yeah.
I thought it was wonderful.
And there was a wall that the surfers would jump over from the beach to get in and get a blowjob and then jump back over.
I saw that happen. I didn't realize what was going on. Most of the time I spent in the darkest room of Dave's, which was the orgy room. I seem to remember there were some red lights or something in there. So you could kind of see bodies moving, but it was like padded benches all around that tended to be kind of sticky, so you needed to hit the showers as soon as you came out of there. But that's where I spent most of the time. And I think that's where I kind of got into my appreciation for multiple partners simultaneously.
Mm.
Haven't talked to Sarah about that.
Huh?
I'm engaged, gentlemen.
Yes. Yeah, we'll be talking
Not
about
yet.
That soon.
We'll be talking about that soon, yes. Okay. But shortly after that, I had my first kind of venture into leather. which, and I can't remember what the group was called. It might have been Leatherman San Diego or something.
Sandman, maybe? Yeah. SMM, that they just have...
Real, yeah, sounds
that's
like
where I met Roadkill.
Yeah, yeah.
If they just had a real estate agent, they would, like, get an empty house every month, and they'd go...
Do you remember that?
Oh, my!
Oh, my God, yeah.
They would, like, do all the water sports in the bathroom. I mean, they had their portable crosses. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
That's where I met
the Sandman, when they rented this empty place in... Bonsall, in the middle of a orange grove. Do you remember that one?
No, I remember. Missed
that.
It seemed we did a lot in Oceanside. Oh. I don't know what. Yeah. Whatever empty, whatever real estate house he was showing was empty. That's
the house they kind of franchised in so that when the new guys came in.
The reason why it was in Oceanside is because of the brand.
No. Can I say something about, you talk about benches being sticky, just a little short story. After the mine shaft closed, the guy who owned it, or was involved somehow, but I don't remember, I didn't get the whole story, used to do private parties at his house, at his loft, in just off Christopher Street, on Weehawken, actually. And the first time that I went there, I met with a friend of mine from New York, and he said, okay, we're going to Wally's Loft. I said, okay, this sounds like fun, cool. He says, when you get there, check your clothes, keep your shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're in the field, then you have problems.
So, did you have more to say?
Well, yeah, I had a brief venture into the Leatherman group, but the best memory I have of that was they were meeting in the place that sells cupcakes now. It used to be Dave's Coffee House in the back patio. It's called Baby Cakes now, yeah, but the back patio. They used to have meetings back there, and my favorite meetings were the ones where they would have auctions. And the very best auction that I ever attended there, I was on the auction block.
Yeah.
And I was wearing what I thought was my, you know, sexiest outfit, but it was a cold night, and I was so scared and so cold. I just kept shivering and shivering and shivering. But, and I was one of the last ones put up on the block. And this two guys started bidding on me, and I had the favorite in mind. And he's the one that won the bid. And so he had some housekeeping things in mind that he wanted to do because they had a Christmas party. This was in December. They had a Christmas party and stuff to take down. So I was helping him take down the Christmas stuff. And then he had me out in the yard planting things. And then he put me in the sling for the very first time. I'd ever been in a sling. Now, I'd been fisted before, but I'd never been fisted in a sling. And it's a wonderful piece of equipment. And shortly after that, I kind of stepped out of leather for a while. I found what I thought was the love of my life. And he and I moved to Seattle and then to Los Angeles. But I was out of the community. It was just him, his family, very straight, although they all knew I was gay. And at the time, I was going by the name of Jason. That's a whole other story. But his family knew me as Uncle Jason, his nieces, nephews, and I was with him for 20 years. And we separated in 90. So I had missed that whole upswing of what was happening in the community at large. I mentioned once before, I felt like I was living in an ivory tower because I knew that this stuff was going on around me. I heard peripherally, but I really didn't have any contact with anybody, though I did have a couple of friends who died. But that was like, you know, it was out there. It wasn't part of my world. When he and I broke up, the very, very first person that I had any sexual contact with, I exposed myself to HIV, and I came down with AIDS. Now, I didn't care at the time. I thought, here was finally some week was an ugly breakup. Here was somebody at least cared about me. So I just threw all that out. I was old enough, I should have known better, but So that's when I came into the AIDS community, was in, actually in 93, when I exposed myself. And I was diagnosed within 6 months of having it progressed to AIDS. But fast forward a little bit, when I found Fetishman San Diego is when I really was able to open my heart and start embracing leather as part of who I am, and who, fortunately, my surge also shares that with me. And so we have a lot more exploring to do. People to go, places to see, things to be.
People to do.
Yes, sir. Yes. Yes.
So, let's be real here.
It's interesting, some of the places and things that you're mentioning, that in 81, 81 I was in the service in Denver, in the Air Force. First time I was at a gay theater, I remember this one gay place on Colfax. I forget. Colfax. Remember Colfax? Main Street?
Wait a minute. It had the logo with the it was U-turn or something like that. It was like Colfax.
The one way?
It was like,
no.
One way, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. One way. It was Colfax.
That was my first leather bar.
Colfax about Emerson, maybe? No, Emerson's Charlie's now. Colfax and maybe Pearl.
Well, I was this young guy, just, like, everything was brand new to me.
Way out west at Sheridan, yes.
Okay.
Not BJ's. BJ's was south. What was the one that was way out west? Because we used to beer bus there all the time.
In what city?
In
Denver.
Denver.
Colfax and Sheridan, that's Westminster, right?
It's the border.
Yeah.
The border. Sheridan's the border.
Yes, I never really, I was just kind of on the edge the whole time and married, actually.
To a woman.
To a woman, yeah. Still about that part. But, it was a lot of the things, they were always service connected. If it was there in Denver, if it was different places, I would just be in the middle of it because of the service. And somehow I would always find, the right places or whatever they were. And I remember one time I was over in Hawaii. So I had to do my, in the reserves, I had to do my 2 weeks training, so it was in Hawaii. Thank you all for taxpayers for paying that. But there was this really cute flight attendant. And wouldn't you know it, I saw him in the bar like an hour after we got there. He was in the same, hey, I recognize you.
You served me warm nuts. Then you returned the favor.
Yeah. But, certainly nothing compared to you guys or anything, but just some of the things that you were saying was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I never enlisted, but my ex was Air Force, and we lived in D.C. I said that I was in all branches of the military at one time or another.
Well, they were in you.
More often I was in them, but yes. even what's the Army unit? The ceremonial unit? Okay. Army unit number one, whatever it is, that does all the ceremonial stuff for the president. I even met a guy who was in that, too. He's like, oh.
If you were in D.C., you had a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, like I said, every branch of the military. I don't think, maybe not Coast Guard.
We're talking about an auction. Just happened to be, all of a sudden, I'm standing in line trying to get in. There's a whole bunch of guys lined up, ready to pay their little money at the booth to get in. When all of a sudden, here comes a whole bunch of police and helicopters. They're raiding the Mark IV at the time, bathhouse in L.A. They were having an auction there that night, and I never got in. But when I see the helicopters and the cops, I'm boom! I'm out of there.
You guys were talking about the exclusivity of the, you know, the bars and bathhouses up in L.A. and back in those days.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why is that there were so many, they could afford to, you know, like, section themselves off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one of the bathhouses down in L.A., you had to, there was a spotlight above the door, and you had to lean back, pull up your shirt, and flex in order to prove you had a six-pack before they'd let you in.
Basic plumbing.
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
Now, the other thing about being in D.C. back then, too, that was interesting, was we were, of course, one of the ground zero for all of the AIDS protest stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, I remember we organized a street theater thing, a die-in at the Supreme Court to protest Bowers versus Hardwick. I remember doing a protest at the I think that's the National Institute of Health thing. We blocked the roads and things like that. So we did a lot of that kind of stuff too, and that was really cool to have, because since I had a motorcycle, they were like, "Well, we need you because you can trace where the, you know, you can get around and you can get to wherever the cops are taking people."
Was that during the Reagan era?
That was during Reagan.
Oh yeah.
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 Yeah, I was in D.C. for most of the Reagan years. I got there in 82 and I left in 91. So it was Reagan and part of the first Bush.
Yeah.
Do you remember a place called the Sanctuary in L.A.?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I remember it very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was there one night when they had a contest. And the contest was, how many full condoms can you attach to the barbed wire fence? Whoever got the most number up there would get a free membership pass.
Full of wet. I mean,
thank you.
Full of, not full of water, I'm assuming.
No.
I don't know who won. I didn't.
That'd be quite a feat, for sure.
No,
Well, the interesting thing about the sanctuary is they didn't have rooms. They had put chain link fence pens.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the chain link fence pen, they put a mattress on the floor. And there was a door, which had a chain and a lock on it. So you could go in there with whoever you wanted to, one or two or three or five or whatever, lock the door, and everybody walking around could see
you.
Nice.
Thank you.
Wow. I don't think I'd like that kind of public critique.
Yeah.
So, you're not doing that right.
So, Michael, could you tell us some of the old bars that used to be here in San Diego? Because we had so many of them.
Yeah. Well, my favorite was the old Pex where... what's that bar now, the kind of preppy bar? It's down on...
The old Wolf's?
You mean no, you're Wolf's? Talking about Bourbon Street?
Yeah, Bourbon Street used to be the old Pex.
Yeah, Bourbon Street is closed.
It's closed.
It's now a new place.
Yeah, it's something new.
Yeah,
is it
you
a
were saying.
Bar? Yeah, so Pex...
No.
It used to be really dark, so everybody... And it was quiet. It wasn't like, you know, music blaring, so people who wouldn't go to any of the bars could go to Pex. I remember Dennis, they had the...
So you're saying Pex today is not
the original Wolf's?
It's not the original? Oh.
Doesn't that Pex today used to be Lorenzo for a while?
Or am I getting confused?
So, remember when the Hole was a leather bar?
Mm-hmm. That's where I used to go.
I met Tom of Finland at the Hole before when he was just before he croaked. I mean, he was like really old. They were holding him up, but it was really just kind of being a dude. They were kind of, you know.
He's an icon.
Yeah, he was just an icon, and he went to the Hole. But ever since I've actually been in San Diego, and I think I actually even went to the Hole when the bases were still here, because I went to Navy boot camp at NTC when the Marine base was here too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the first parts I even knew about was the whole
and the silver spur.
Sunday afternoons was the time for some reason. I think it's still that way.
Sunday afternoons
always seem to be the time for some reason.
Yeah.
It's in transition.
Is it still busy?
Well, it officially closed 2 weeks ago, but then it had a soft opening last week.
Right.
The hole in the wall, I think.
By different owners.
But it's now called the hole in the wall.
Yeah.
Well, that's original.
Is that one from San Francisco?
I have no idea if they're connected.
They're
hole in the wall in San Francisco is not the same either.
Yeah, no, it's the hole in the wall.
It moved. And I think the only thing they brought over was the candle.
And then the WCPC is for all the time in their people.
West Coast Production Company, Ball Express, or some of the others?
Yeah, I have a question for all of you. If I didn't come tonight, I would have never heard anything like some of these stories. So I was wondering, do you guys write this down, keep journals, and what?
You record it, though, right?
I'm recording it.
But, I mean, so other people can eventually... get these stories.
I do not have a journal for it, no. However, I was making a note of something that I do want to write when some of the stuff came up, but it won't be all of it.
Well, if any of you do write anything, make sure that I get a copy, because I'll post it online.
Yeah.
Seriously, because, see, I've posted many, many articles about my past, and I recently recorded about 5 hours of personal verbal history of my own, because I needed to just kind of purge some of the stories and let them out. And I posted that online. But what was interesting is that when I was recording it, almost everybody in the room was under the age of 30, because they wanted to hear what the hell happened to our generation.
Mm-hmm.
They were curious, what the hell damaged us so damn badly? And because a lot of times we just assume that everybody just knows, but it's like having gone through the war, you don't normally tell people what it was like. And so that's why, see, this kind of provides a good break point, because, you know, this is when we start doing that. Me being me, I have to editorialize for a second. I'm really glad to have you guys here. Thank you. This is very important, because they're not making any more of us, you know. And, you know, one of the points that I made is that we are, a lot of us who've been through the really roughest stuff, we're pretty rare. You know, we're like the snow leopards. And the problem with the larger culture is that you can drive down suburbia and you don't know that behind that garage door is a slam, you know, and that the guy who's been doing it has been doing it for 40 years. But you see him in the supermarket and you don't know, because we don't have that kind of contact with each other these days.
Unless you slow down and you hear the moans.
Yeah, and the rattling of the chains, yeah.
You see him wearing his spandex while he's shopping.
I'd like to answer your question. Kind of in a tangential way. I used to belong to an organization up in L.A., and we had a group something like this, where a person who I will only give the initials of, because I don't want to badmouth him personally, but GB, gave this big, long speech. And then he wrote a book. So my advice to you is take big grain of salt when you're listening to bozos like us.
Yeah.
Because an awful lot of what he was talking about was conjecture on his part and misremembering things.
Yes.
So there is an element of truth even to what I said, but there's also an exaggeration. Mm. And you have to be very careful with that. Sometimes the exaggeration gets beyond you.
It's called literary
license. When I first learned about leather, they told me I bought this book called The Leather Man's Journal. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's a collection of stories.
Yeah.
If every bozo wrote a book, then we could get the truth from all of the books.
Yeah.
You can do that.
So, if you want to read them all.
Yeah.
So then you can see, you know, what's exaggerated and what's really there. And I'd like to say, you know, as a straight person, I want to hear more of this stuff, and I'm sure there's others out there who would be very fascinated by all these things that have happened.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible, and you guys, like he said, there's going to be no more of you, and you should really record your history.
So I just had my 70th birthday. And there's a couple of guys who said,
No way.
Yeah. Want to see my driver's license?
well, I have an idea that's a challenge for you, then.
Yeah.
You own a cell phone, or do you own a, video camera? Set up something. I mean, I know that they'd be willing to do it. I know I would.
Yeah, start interviewing people.
So, I mean, I did the same thing. My dad was a POW in World War II in prison, and when he was like 90, I knew he wasn't going to live very many more years, and I really didn't want to lose the stories. So every time I would go home, I would sit there and spend 30 minutes with him and just record it and stuff. And now it's ended up on YouTube and everything, and there's the story, the real stuff that wasn't the movie and all that kind of stuff.
Like PBS.
And if you want to do something like that, do that. And then just ask around. And then if you want, post this stuff on YouTube, and then you get out to millions of people.
Yeah.
And then other people may find you to do it also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, just as one example, I mean, what he was bringing up, I'm pretty certain Club X would be really pleased to have a historical thing like this for all the straight folks, because they want to know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know if you've been hanging around with the pansexual crowd lately, but they fucking worship us. Men who've been down down this path, they want to know what happened to us, and they hold us in the highest regard, and it would be a really good thing to have another one of these with them, because the questions will be out of the blue. But they're, I mean, I can't begin to tell you. I mean, it's like rose petals and red carpets in front of you wherever you go. They're really, really happy that we made it through and that we're visible again. They want us back. They really do. You know, what they keep telling me is Club X was started by gay men, you know, and we want you back. So just even for a little while, just to visit, I think that they'd be very, I mean, you would be treated like royalty.
The point I was making about my age is I'm sitting here.
Looking 50?
But behind me are about maybe 30, 50 people mm-hmm. who have gone.
Yep.
And they're not here.
140.
And I'm very proud of the fact that I'm 7 years old yep. and that I'm still here.
Didn't expect to be, did you?
And that's all you know.
Well, it reminds me of one of the sayings that George... What was his name? The guy with the cigar?
George Burns.
George Burns used to say, if I had known I was going to live this long, I'd taken better care of myself.
I always feel like I shouldn't be part of this group because I'm your age.
Well, look at me. I'm almost 70.
I was 5'81".
So Nate is 53 isn't real,
right?
Yeah.
I'm
55.
So, yeah, with all those who didn't make it, makes the stories more rare and hard to come by.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You don't want to hear some of those stories, though.
No.
Sometimes they do.
Sometimes.
See, that's the problem.
I don't want to hear them, but I know them.
Well, that's the problem, though, that I've seen, is that we're so afraid of the pain that it might consume us. You know, because if I gave in to all the grief that's in me, I don't know how I could ever come out of it, you know. And that's why I'm very afraid to deal with a lot of it still at this age.
Yeah.
You know, that there is a lot of damage that we have not acknowledged as a tribe. And it has echoed down through the generations. My observation, editorializing, I mean, I'm the founder of this group, so I know what's going on. I got my finger on the pulse. And two generations have come along after us that are fucking starved to know what the hell happened to us. Because we gave all during the bad years, and then we dropped away. That's not bad, it's not good, it's just what happened. And these younger folks, they're just like, please let us know the things that you know about relationships, about not just hard skills like, you know, kinky stuff, but soft skills, you know, wisdom on how to be successful in a world that has been very often very hostile to us. And these younger folks are just begging for it. And speaking for myself, I get accused all the time. Oh, you're always, you know, so egotistical because you're always telling people. Well, I'm the only one doing it for a lot of these people. I mean, so that segues into what's happening this Saturday. So why don't you talk a little bit about what's happening on this Saturday? This is what I do. Okay? Please.
Yes, sir. Well, this Saturday... And I learned that we're forming up for the parade, the leather contingent is forming up on Harvey Milk Street, on the end of that street, on at the center street end where the center is. So yeah. It's that end of the block where we're forming up. And on this Saturday, it will be the one-year anniversary that my sir and this boy, and I'm almost 70, but I'm still a boy, will be coming together in an official way. It will be our one-year anniversary. Last Pride, we were walking hand in hand. He'd never been to that section of the forming up before, and along comes Master Magnum, who gave us his blessing in this, like, sisters of perpetual indulgence kind of very flamboyant way when he realized that we were a couple. And so we thought, perfect, we have to mark that anniversary. To begin with, my sir will be receiving his meerkat from Papa Tony. And then I was previously a collared boy to Dad Ron. He uncollared his boys a couple months ago, but I have asked him to kind of recreate what he did with Pop Tommy when he had Daddy Lee, who had been Tommy's handler, uncollar him and then Dad put his collar. I will not have that happen again. So I'll have Dad Ron uncollar me, and then now my sir will put his conditional collar on me. And I want this to happen at Pride, for not just because it's my anniversary, not just because it's a convenient way to be there. I want some witnesses from our leather tribe and our extended tribal members, because not enough of this type of ceremony and experience is out there. The very first time I had any knowledge about pups was when I saw Dad Papa Tommy. I've only seen one other meerkat presentation, that was Master Magnum's. I missed your collaring. That was at a fetishman meeting, wasn't it?
Yes.
And this sort of thing needs to be out there, and we need to have some way of documenting it so that we can share it with other groups who, like you were saying, aren't aware of this part of our history. Because this, to me, is as important part of the history as anything else that ever comes along. Mm-hmm. And we have been losing this part of the history. And I'm hoping that I can be in some small way to help direct us back into it.
Would you guys like to use an HD camera if you want to record that? Would you like to use
as far as video?
Yes.
That would be nice. That should be lovely. Yes, please. There's two of them. You can pick one.
The only thing that but we know is that my sir, yeah. Name is Sir Ralph. Papa Tony has offered to coordinate this when we talk about we wanted to do this collaring thing, and then all came to council.
Right.
And it's been snowballing in a wonderful way. But yes, we know that we'll have pictures, hopefully, still.
Yes.
But we have had no contacts to have any other kind of recording out.
Okay.
What time is the whole
lecture? The reason why I'm being vague about the timing is because I'm used to the beginning of the parade. We're not anywhere near the front of the parade. We're going to be at the staging at we're at number 95, so we're going to be way waiting for it to start. You know, then everybody else will be marching way the hell past us, and we're going to be. I'm going to wait until just before we have to start moving, you know, like about 15 minutes before, because I'll be able to tell how far along it's going by looking at the contingent numbers, mm-hmm. because we want the maximum number of people there.
There.
And that's what I do every year when I do the group photo and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's why I was being a little vague about it.
You said we're gathering where? That was unusual. We're gathering
right over in front of the center.
Right in front of the center?
Yeah. Across the street.
Okay. I thought it was somewhere else. Okay.
It's like the opposite end of the block of where we were last year.
Yeah.
So the point of this, the reason why I brought this up, you know, and it's not aimed at anybody here. What we've been starving for in our local culture is what is called vertical honor. Okay, Jerry brought that one up, and I hooked right onto it. Horizontal honor is, hey, good job, man, you know, between peers. What has been needed is men who have wisdom, who have credibility, who have natural grace and authority to bless people, because we have so much credibility based on all the years we've spent becoming the men that we are. And by blessing others. See, my job, I'm stepping into the role of an elder. The job of an elder, as I define it, is I notice and then I bless. And it means a lot when that happens. It's something that we need as a culture, because otherwise we're just a bunch of random particles, like vapor particles. We don't have any connection to each other. That this is an honor-based culture here that we have with Fetishman San Diego. And I invite you guys, please, to come be at the beginning of the parade at least. Well, if you can, you're going to be at, well, you're not going to be at Sturgis. That's next weekend, right?
Sturgis is the first weekend of August.
Oh, okay, got it. Thank you.
But you've got something going on up there the next weekend, right?
Right. I'm just saying that if you can, because we're always looking for elders, because they're so fucking rare. I mean, you know, our whole culture says, hey, you got to stay young and strong and in the game and, you know, got to be on the front lines and, you know, keep up with the young ones. And you dye your hair and you get the pec implants. But and all that. But the fact that, that's just Peter Pan. That's just Peter Pan. You know, that's just Peter Pan. That there is honor in being the men that we are. And that the whole world is looking to us. You know, I could go on and on and on, and I apologize. I tend to do that. I tend to get excited. Bottom line of all this is you guys have absolutely no idea how loved and valued you are in this culture. And you've discovered it. You've seen how people treat you. You know, you go to a big public event, and it's like you're, you know, the God who walks among us. And I like that, you know. And it's really nice when somebody does stick around and just self-identify. Yeah, I've been through the flames, and they all want to know us. And it's just amazing. I mean, not just in the kink. I mean, okay, I'm sorry, I got to say this. If I'm in full gear, and I go out into the straight world in Buffalo or in San Diego or wherever, everyone wants to know me because I'm an older man with a gray beard. You know, I'm not pretending to be anybody's 23-year-old. But they all want to know because being an older leather man, it means I've been around. And I've been this way a long time. You know, my gear looks used. And they all want to know, what's it like to be this cool? The world has shifted. Yes, marriage, you know, has shifted over into our territory. But being queer and radical has shifted in the other direction, too. They want what we have had. They want to know what our lives are like and how we've learned to cope. They want to know how to be cool, because we've been doing it for a long time. The stuff that we take for granted, it's all news to them, and they want to know. So, just saying. Sorry, I'm editorializing, I do that, but I'm passionate. So having expressed that, let's hear it for all the men who spoke up tonight.
Yay.
And don't be too surprised if we invite you back, because this is nice. I mean, each time it can be a different flavor or whatever. This is, you guys are history on the hoof, and I thank you for coming in. It means a lot. I wanted to invite Roadkill, but I don't have his contact information anymore. And I could have asked you now that I think about it.
Is he still around?
Yeah, I just saw him. He and I peed together in the same toilet at the last movie night. So he's around. Yeah. So if we could pass around.
Another question here.
Yes.
Well, I just want to make a point. To me, this isn't just about, a culture. It's a slice of human history, just as someone who's lived through maybe a religious movement or lived under communism or had this happen to them or that happened. It's a slice of human experience, and if it were lost when you guys died, I think that would be tragic if it weren't recorded.
Yeah. And be a part of that.
You can do that. You guys can go into interview once a month or something like that on camera.
You've got to stop. I'm certainly willing to sit down with you and put that on tape and save it, figure out where you want to put it. There's archives, there's leather archives here in town. You can put it on YouTube and it's there probably forever. You know?
There's a couple of places.
Like I said, you get a huge audience that way too. So.
Yeah.
There's a couple of places you have to visit that give you good background. One is Chicago at the Leather Archives Museum. If you haven't been there, try it.
This is for paying for the use of the space.
And the other one is, if you have a chance, you don't have to do this. If you have a chance, get to the UK. There's a lot of
there was money involved.
There's a lot of people. A lot of people there that are about our age. I mean, there's some places in the UK, especially in London, the West Side, that you think to yourself, these guys are like me. You know, at least I feel that way. I walk in and I feel like I'm at home because they're like me. It's very difficult sometimes to sit down like I am right now and talking to you because I can see that there's a huge age difference. But when I walk in and I see people like Tony and this bozo over here who's my friend, I feel at home with them. You know, I feel comfortable.
Good.
And that's exactly how I feel when I go to the West End of London. But, those are two places where you can get some background information.
London and what was the other one?
Also, I can get the link and I'll post it. There is a new website for people to tell their verbal history. And I'll get the information. There's actually an app for it, too, where you can record your history and it gets posted for everybody to witness.
Wow.
And that's also a very powerful thing, too, because it's all about documenting whatever your history is, because there's a lot of stuff that we never take the time to document that could be very wonderful, because people will be studying that 500 years from now.
Yeah.
They really will.
Yeah.
So the final point I want to make to you, wonderful men, okay, you've noticed it's been a really good vibe here. As Steve can tell you, it gets more fun sometimes. It's been a very somber topic tonight, but it never gets worse. And we're not going to expect you guys to do things. But sometimes, please do show up, because we miss you. You know, there's been a place set at the table for Kinky Grandpa for a long time, and we want you. You know, that it's we have fun.
Is he talking about Grandpa?
Hey, I am. We got a few grandpas in the room. No, but I'm saying is that there is honor in being who we are. That we're not trolls. That we're not discardable. We're not yesterday's trash. We are very much what these men crave in their lives. Mm-hmm. You have no idea how strong the hunger is. Because, see, the stereotype for older men is, oh, I don't want to be called a troll. You know, discounted, you know, you don't have big muscles, then move on. But in the other direction, we're worried that, you know, if we approach the young men, they'll say, oh, you pervert, you predator, you whatever. And that's noise from outside. Within this culture, within this tribe, we have these handsome young men who really do want to know what we're about, don't you? Yeah. The ones that care a lot tend to be the way that we were when we were younger. We knew a good thing, is that we got to hang around with a bunch of older men who knew what the fuck they were talking about, because guys our age didn't know. And that's what happened in my life. And I bless every moment I spent with the older men back in those days. They taught me how to be a man in all the ways that I needed to be taught. And see, that's really that role modeling, that wisdom is just so precious. You guys have no idea how valuable you are in this world. So again, I'm ranting, I do that. But thank you for coming. It's hugely important. Thank you again.
Thank you. That's me.
Oh, if we're going to do that. All right. So, our brother Michael right here. Yes, we're going
to
do announcements in a moment. But I was going to say, our brother Michael here brought refreshments. But before we do that, Scottella?
I did contact Sarge about the AC.
Mm-hmm.
Fuses were blown. Parts are on order. Landlord's been informed.
So as far... Yeah, thank you.
Announce the weight.
You could have gotten naked.